This is the Leapcast, where we talk about how today's current events impact your real life. If you are tired of politics, or you are just exhausted from the spin, this show is for you. My name is Andrew Lieb, and every week I host a talk radio show breaking down the news from an independent point of view. We discuss real estate, business, and your health, hear from the experts, and learn the truth on the Leapcast.
Personal coach and trusted attorney, Andrew Lieb.
We wanted to talk to you about all the decisions that happened this week. We were going to talk about the independent state legislature theory, about religious discrimination, about sexual orientation discrimination, the Supreme Court. But you know what? We couldn't get past affirmative action for most of the show because, wow, this is a hard philosophical debate. This is the Leapcast where you learn what really happened in this Supreme Court. Okay. On behalf of the Leapcast audience, our friends and people everywhere, it is Lauren Lieb's birthday on July 4th.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, when you have your fireworks, roast that corn, sitting at the beach, just everyone give thanks that it's Lauren Lieb's birthday.
You're obsessed with corn.
Corn, hot dogs. Yeah. He loves a good barbecue.
I love corn.
You know,
I actually like canned corn better than corn on the cob.
When you say canned corn, the cream one, Morty, or the regular one?
Oh, it's the regular, but I like putting it in a bowl, and then I put all these different condiments on it.
You know what's really good?
Like hummus and hot sauce, sometimes marinara sauce.
You know what's really good that you've never tried?
My wife thinks it's disgusting.
You may want to replicate it.
I agree with Tiffany.
You can't have it because of kosher, but I'm going to tell you about it. At KFC, they have this bowl that has like little like popcorn chicken and then mashed potatoes. And corn and gravy all in one. It's phenomenal.
Mixed like a salad?
Like mixed together. It's all in the mashed potato. And it's like the
best. I don't like mashed potatoes.
Don't ever say that to me ever again.
Get out.
It's a filler. Like potatoes in general to me are fillers.
Morty, I'm going to put you in the category of Justice Thomas now. You're now the Justice Thomas of our group if you're going to say that about mashed potatoes. I'm sure he hates
it. It's not disgusting. Like bananas are disgusting.
You
like
it.
You benefited in life.
Bananas and Jell-O are the only two foods I won't eat.
You benefit in life from bananas, Jell-O.
I do get Jell-O.
From potatoes. And now you don't want future generations to have it. You're like Justice Thomas in affirmative action.
No potassium for you.
No potassium for Morty.
Now, mashed potato, we'll talk about affirmative action in a second, but mashed potatoes, they don't like gross me out. It's just a filler.
I want to go back to these.
It makes you full and it doesn't add anything.
Bananas is what I'm concerned.
Yeah, thank
can you?
Thank
He's
you.
A
you're
tennis player.
Weirdo.
Thank you.
He plays tennis. No potassium. You what need to know.
So wait, can I before something really important?
Is it because they're all old you play against?
Tiffany's a very like old-fashioned Thanksgiving person. She needs, you know, everything on the table.
Tell us about the table. Tell me what's there.
But I've gotten her.
I want to know what's there first.
Hold on one second.
Set the table.
I've gotten her to substitute the mashed potatoes for mashed cauliflower. Have you had mashed cauliflower?
I cannot believe that you are saying this right now.
It tastes so good. It's delicious. Have you ever had mashed cauliflower?
I have, and it's
and it's lighter, and it's delicious.
Okay.
I've had restaurants butcher it.
Yeah,
so
I just feel like it's no comparison to mashed potatoes.
Yeah, I'm with
I
Alex.
Respect you, Morty.
I want to know what Morty's traditional table is because Lauren and I have an article that you can tell if people voted Republican or Democrat based on what's on the table. There's apparently very different traditional table.
That's so funny.
And we've actually experienced it because we have half our family that's very liberal and half that's very conservative. And depending on what we're in the mood for eating, we go to that family.
Or we say, bring a dish. And then you know immediately based on the dish they brought, they're a Republican or
a
Democrat.
No, seriously. One brings macaroni and cheese. One does not. Mm-hmm. One has, I don't need to go into it. We'll do that on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. This is not Thanksgiving.
So what is the liberal or conservative food?
I'm telling you, it's all different. Like, there's a substitute for almost everything. Like, you just did the mashed potatoes for, and I'll say you were very liberal when you just decided to have the whole, Alex.
Wow,
I wouldn't
Morty.
Tell people that at the synagogue.
They may judge you. Liberals at the synagogue.
They might judge you.
I live in Plainview.
Plain Jew. So anyway, let's talk about what's going on because I just had a panic attack on CBS radio and I think I straightened it out now.
And what define your panic attack?
Decisions come out at 10 a.m. They don't like come out all at 10 a.m. They come out in a row. And these decisions vary between 30 pages, 70 pages. Some are 300 pages. And the Supreme Court decisions. And they came out this week on 3 days. We had three big days of decisions this week. We had Tuesday, yesterday, which was Thursday, and Friday. And the laws of the United States change when these decisions come out. And they're single space. And sometimes they're, we have nine justices. So sometimes they're close decisions, big dissents. Sometimes they're 9-0. Sometimes they're 6-3. 6-3 appears to be the most common since six of the judges eat one thing for Thanksgiving and three eat the other. And
on the hot button issues.
Well, yeah. The hot pocket is.
Hot pocket.
Hot pocket.
Hot potatoes.
Most of them do not do cauliflower mashed potatoes.
Yeah, no.
That's only three.
I could see Clarence Thomas liking that.
Yeah, there's no probably
way.
Would.
There's no way. Him and Ginny use it as a game, but it's a different type
oh,
of game.
Oh, Lord.
So he's like,
Andrew,
Ginny, you're my little cauliflower.
If you can make up some sort of religious reason to eat cauliflower, he would do it.
We'll start with that. But I want to answer Alex's question first about what stresses me out is that it was Lauren. Oh,
and we both have the question.
I thought you both said it at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, we agree.
Yeah, you both were like looking at me. Like,
I thought that you just scan the pages in your head and then all of a sudden you have a quick turnaround.
Well, so what happened is I was on a 1040 and I was reading the first decision, which was 70 pages. Then there was a decision that I think was 30 pages. And then there was a decision that 90 pages. And the 30 pages and the 90 page were on the same topic. And the host says to me, can you tell me definitively what's going on with student debt? I said, I can't tell you anything definitively on 120 pages of reading until I've read it. I can tell you that one of the decisions says that they didn't have standing. Standing means the ability to be heard. And the other decision seems to say that Biden can't wipe student debt, but I'm not definitively going to tell you anything because, like, let me give you another statement of how we're going to do this. On affirmative action, if you just read the headlines, you'd think there can't be affirmative action. You'd think there's no more race consideration in universities. But if you read Justice Roberts' decision, you'd see that what he changed it to is that there can't be anything that is a concrete effect, that he uses these words, and it can't be just based on your race, but a student must be treated based on his own or her experiences, he writes. But here's the key, ready?
So for like an essay.
Here's the key. Yeah, in an essay. How their race influenced their character in a way that would have a concrete effect on the university can be considered. So what they say is that you can't have a macro rule on race. You could have a micro rule on race. And now for people that are saying I'm misconstruing the decision, I'm not telling you that they're allowing affirmative action, and we'll deeper dive into it on today's show. We're going to go into the big decisions of the day. But what I'm saying to answer Lauren and Alex to start off with is to give you a concrete what a decision says from the headline, it makes you a moron. And then my favorite thing, and then we'll go to the decisions and we'll start talking about them, is these morons that are on our social media, these idiots, these trolls, these repulsive human beings that say that the media is trying to manipulate everything. And where would we have time to manipulate everything where I'm on a 1040 talking about 190 pages of decisions?
I have a solution.
Like, I'm not telling you that we wouldn't want to manipulate everyone, but we don't even know ourselves what we're going to talk about. Like, honestly, I'm going on and they're like, did this decision come on? Like, we're texting me and the host on this radio show, and like, we're like together trying to figure out what came out. Where would we have time to manipulate?
Are you saying that you did not have a meeting this morning about how to manipulate the public on media?
I'm saying it's functionally impossible to media.
Good to know.
I'm just trying to say on court decisions. I'm not saying on other things. Like maybe with politics, you can do it. Maybe on business decisions, you could do it. But if you are analyzing a court decision, it is a functional impossibility to manipulate based on the court decision when someone's analyzing it in live time when it comes out. I'm not telling you in the future they can't manipulate it. I'm not telling you, like, right now on the Leapcast, we may be manipulating you because we've had some time to think about it and skew it how we want to.
But what would be the purpose? Like, why would we want to manipulate?
I'm not saying we are.
Okay.
I'm saying that that's functionally possible. But I'm telling you, my only point that I'm trying to say is when you're listening to the news, as decisions come out, if you don't want to be manipulated, tune into a program on a decision day at around 11 o'clock, 10:30, 11. Mm-hmm. There's no possibility to be manipulated. I would prefer your decision. You listen about noon, because at least the person will have a chance to read most of the thing and just tell you what it says. What were you going to say, Morty?
I was going to say these justices should internally agree to a page limit for their decisions.
Brutal, man.
Like, there's nothing you need 90 pages to say.
Well,
like, if you got a 90-page motion from somebody arguing a point, you would throw it in the garbage.
Well, I'm going to tell you in two lines what this week's decisions were. I can do it that quick. Ready? Here's what the justices said. Let's further religion and speech rights, while let's not further race and sexual orientation. Or one can read it that the First Amendment and Equal Protection Clause won this week. That's what all the decisions said. They didn't say what the media is saying of Biden lost his ability to do student loans. No, what they said instead is that the HEROES Act that he was basing it on, this law from when we were in a war years ago, doesn't give the broadest of power, because what did we learn, Morty, last year about what our Supreme Court thinks about executive branch in making decisions?
Right. They believe it should be limited.
Very limited. So unless there's express right of Congress, executive branch can't make a decision. That's what that decision really says. Like, the justices weren't sitting around and being like, it's unfair for rural conservatives that didn't go to college to have to pay the debt of people that went to college, as Marjorie Taylor Greene would have you think.
Right.
That's not – and by the way, I'm not just picking on Marjorie here, because on the other hand, you have AOC saying how we have to cure student debt and fix all the issues. That's just not what happened at the Supreme Court. What happened in the Supreme Court – is, first of all, when it comes to that decision, which we're just going to put to the side because I think it's a boring decision. Yeah. It doesn't impact your life unless you're someone that owes student debt. And yeah, Alex, I get you owe student debt.
No, but
Morty,
I get
you owe student debt. I get that lots of people owe student debt, but it's not going to fundamentally shift the dynamic of the American fabric.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there are decisions that will. And I have to tell you, I'm not clear affirmative action is going to really do it. There's two decisions that I think were the most important this week, and last week, just to be clear, the most important without a doubt of this entire term was about these independent state legislators. So we'll start with that. Then we're going to go into the two cases I think are the most important. Number one, which is about religious discrimination or modifications, accommodations at work. I'll tell you why that's important. Then about whether someone needs to perform a service that's speech for someone in a specific orientation or otherwise. So the three decisions, one more time, we're doing on the Leapcast.
So we're passing on the affirmative action.
We're passing on it. We're passing on the student loan one. Now, we can talk about them. You are welcome to bring it up. Morty, I'm not the king here. Like, you bring up whatever you want. But I want you to know that I don't think the affirmative action decision is as impactful as everyone is saying to everyone's lives. Like, I think the majority of people don't go to college.
Yeah, isn't only 35% of people go to college in the United States?
And then
like that?
Of that, the majority of people that go to college aren't affected by race
in
going to college. And then of that, the majority of people that were affected by race would still go to college, just not as good of a college.
Right.
And we could get into the debate, like someone went on to social media with me and like, well, you're wrong because we should get rid of legacy admissions too. That's illegal
too.
That's
what AOC said.
Yeah. And I said,
first of all, that wasn't before the Supreme Court.
Well, that was my response, Morgan. I said, I'm not saying that's a bad policy.
You have to do a disparate impact analysis.
You'd have to bring Morty, to Morty's point, I'll translate.
Go ahead.
It's possible that legacy is allowing people of Caucasian descent or Christian descent to have a leg up in getting in. And when Morty says disparate impact, you'd have to show that there's a statistical significant correlation, meaning that a majority of people are getting in disproportionately based on their race, that we're using a benign statement saying it's legacy, but it's really giving a leg up to people of their race, and therefore violates the 14th Amendment of the Equal Protection Clause and Title VI when it comes to colleges that are not a private, exactly.
The
like
policy
Harvard.
On its face is not discriminatory. When you looked at the outcome or the impact of the policy, that's where the disparate impact comes in.
So I think that's a fascinating case.
Yeah.
And I wrote to the gal on social media, she should bring it. I just wouldn't.
Right.
And the reason I wouldn't bring it
is really hard to win.
Well, first of all, it's really hard to win. Second of all, Title VI no longer gets attorneys. Well, it no longer gets emotional distress damages. No, emotional distress damages when you're suing based on a decision a year before. And I don't know that it's going to have enough damages to be worthwhile. So if, for example, Morty, Mike Bloomberg calls me up. Mike, where are you? And Bloomberg says, I'm rich. And I go, I know. And he goes, I'm so rich, I'd like to fund this. Get rid of legacies. I'd say, you pay me, I'll do it.
Except for any of his children.
I don't think he has to care. When you have Bloomberg genes, like all of a sudden they don't. Because legacy.
He could just donate a wing or something.
So they want to get away with that too, Laura.
Oh, okay.
But what I would say to you is that even if they got rid of legacy, meaning like my mom went to Columbia so I could go to Columbia.
Yeah.
And even if they got rid of donations, like the college scandals, the university scandals, they said you can't make donations, can't donate a wing, you can't get in. People are still going to want famous people's children because it's good for marketing.
Yeah.
Like just
famous
the last name.
Famous people's children is not the same thing as legacy.
And I think we've spoken about it on the show, the Sotomayor firefighters case that goes through disparate impact. Remember the people that they took a test and it was neutral in its face, but a majority of the people who passed were white.
I get it.
Yeah.
And what about it?
So what I'm saying is it's a very hard case to win.
Yes.
Because all you have to show is that there was an actual legitimate purpose for what you were doing that wasn't discriminatory. So if you say, we need money as a school, that's why we bring in legacy people, you know, that you're going
to
win.
I was talking to Newsday. They haven't published the article yet. It was about how we make decisions on cases. They were interested on it. And I was saying we look at, as Morty just said, how hard it is to win, meaning what's our percentage of winning? Second of all, how much is it going to cost to win?
Yeah.
Third of all, what do we get if we win? And the reason why I wouldn't bring that case, unless Michael Bloomberg calls me, and I'm available, Mikey, is that the cost-benefit analysis would therefore misallocate scarce resources on more winnable cases that have more damages. So therefore, we'd have to put our resources on the case that is less likely to win. Whereas I think that the best solution for people that want to get rid of legacy or get rid of donations is to pass a statute that gets rid of legacy and gets rid of donations. That's a better allocation of resources. Go lobby that.
Yeah.
Change it. Have people run on that platform, which is what, by the way, I said to Michael Aiello on Court TV last night when we had this exact conversation, is that I think that they definitely should go do that if they want to run. Although Michael and I, because you bring the case, we at the law firm of Michael and Andrew, which we created last night, believe that there are two ways to still well, we use first names, Lauren. Yeah. That's how you know in lawyer circles that's a joke. Lawyers would never be so casual to use first names like you, Lauren.
I think your buddy Michael, Muggle, instead of paying you
Mikey,
will just pay off all these colleges to do what he wants them
to do. Well, two different Michaels. Michael Bloomberg.
Mikey, your buddy.
So
Mikey.
Michael Aiello and I said on Court TV last night, and then I'm gonna go to the case I want to talk about, that if you read the affirmative action case, which I really don't want to get too far into right now because, and I know we are,
300
is that
pages.
If you read it,
17 minutes in.
If you read it, it actually says a way schools can continue doing affirmative action because it says the problems with the schools, North Carolina and Harvard, were that they had no end date to their program and they had no objective data to measure of whether they were achieving their goals of creating the more robust exchange of ideas. And what Roberts kept saying is, you expect us to believe, take your word on it.
Right.
And that's the flaw.
He's saying the framework is unworkable.
It's unworkable.
Yeah, and to me, what I think he was saying is there's no real way to differentiate that standard from quotas. Because when people are saying, when admissions boards are saying, I want to increase diversity, they have a number in their mind as to how many minorities would lead to that diversity.
Well,
so
that's
a very gray area between quotas and using race as a factor.
That's why the law firm of Michael and Andrew isn't the law firm of Michael, Morty, and Andrew. Because the law firm of Michael and Andrew said that there's no way, not overall, but the way they did it to do that. Our new law firm said that they should hire the law firm of Michael and Andrew because we believe that if you brought social scientists into it and you studied how those two things would be correlated, you actually could, because, you know, university have this resource. It's kind of like saying, I own a street paving company. Have you noticed how great my driveway is? You know, these universities have researchers in social science. They should go put their researchers in social science to create measurable objectives that are shown to be statistically significantly correlated to the goals they're attempting to achieve, put them in peer-reviewed articles, and then make their system of affirmative action to match exactly with the data they manufacture and manufacturing credibility to do, and therefore they can have affirmative action again. They just have to have concrete answers.
The goal itself is vague.
He's doing this whole Ben Shapiro fast-talking thing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the whole problem. The goal of diversity is vague.
But diversity is a compelling interest, or it has been a compelling interest.
Why not make it specific? Yeah, why can't you just make it specific?
How could you ever define
by diversity? Social scientists explaining it?
Regardless how specific you make it, there's still some inherent quotas involved.
It depends on how you do it. I think there's ways to do it, and you can create. My point, I guess, what Michael and I were saying is that, Morty, we're not bringing you in the law firm. Maybe Alex, but the thing is,
we were saying
that after Roe v. Wade, they kept coming up with new statutes and new tests to challenge and overthrow Roe v. Wade because there was doors left open in the ambiguity of what they wrote. Mm-hmm. What we were saying is if you read the affirmative action case, there's clearly doors left open.
Right.
And universities that have endowments like Harvard that want to do this and have researchers that want to do this, and I'm not saying they want to, can definitely challenge this law in the future because the way Roberts wrote it, he created openings for doing it in the future different ways.
Definitely
so the invitation is get creative, universities.
Get creative and get concrete with your
objective.
Well, two things. Your goal, which is what I think you're using as the word for objective, and your objectives to achieve it, meaning you need to have a very clear goal, to Morty's point and the Morty law firm, of that is clearly not based on quotas. Agreed completely, Morty.
Yeah.
You need a different
goal. I think it's hard to do, but I don't think so.
I think you could do it based on studying student responses in classes and the amount of exchange of ideas that are happening by pulling your live data of your students and saying that you want to change the concepts that you're trying to do. And I'm not a social science guidance, but I could see a sociologist coming in and saying, this course spanned 1,000 different topics with a more diverse population, and it spanned only 800 topics. Our goal is to have it span 1,100 topics, and we show if they do this, this debate will happen. And what I'm trying to articulate is if you read the Bakke case, which underlies this new affirmative action case, if you read the Grutter case that underlies this, it's for a more robust exchange of ideas. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that they have to study how many exchange of ideas are actually happening now, have a goal for exchange of ideas, and have measurable statistics outside of it to get to that exchange of ideas, and therefore you're following Robert's invitation to do what you want to do, not saying as a policy matter, I want to do that in the first place. Just saying, because I'm satisfied, I think, as Lauren said at the first place, I don't want to put words in her mouth. I don't think Alex is satisfied. But I am satisfied with the fact that they say that you can write an application and show how race affects you in the micro of your character. And I'm satisfied because I don't think all Jews are the same, all blacks are the same, all Christians are the same, all gays are the same. I don't think everyone's all the same.
But aren't they all subject to the same societal?
No, they're not. Because some African Americans are from Africa and they're descendants of slaves, and some African Americans moved from Africa last year and they've had a different experience.
The way that society treats them and the structures in society that disadvantage them doesn't say, oh, you're from Africa or you're from, you know.
Well, those are two different answers. So I agree with you, except I think that someone in society that has an experience in Manhattan has a very different experience than someone in rural Alabama. It's different societies. So I think each one is individualized. And I'm not saying that – I think Tim Scott would tell you that he doesn't have this experience. I would think that in response, Obama would say he did have this experience. I've seen them both speak about it. And my only point is I think Obama, if he had that experience, should have that weighed into his admission And Tim Scott, who says he didn't have the experience, shouldn't have it weighed into his admission.
But didn't they lie then?
It encourages people to have to write in their essays how their race impacted them, instead of just honoring the fact that American society has traditionally operated against entire swaths of the population.
So maybe that's what's going to happen.
But here's the real question.
Organizations now are going to say, put race into your essay.
Right.
They are.
That's unfortunate. You shouldn't have to do that.
Well, let's start off with, our essays unfortunate in the first place? Like, everyone's putting bullshit in their essays.
Oh, my
essays.
God.
Yeah, and now ChatGPT is writing all the essays.
But I want to go back to Alex and after Morty's statement, and I want to know how you address that. You say it's unfortunate they're going to have to put race in their essay. I think it's unfortunate they have to write that they volunteered at the nursing home in their essay. Like, I want to understand.
You think essays should be taken out?
I think that essays should be optional. Uh-huh. And they should only be used when you have something that you need to express that's not in there. For example, if when you were in high school, you started a nonprofit, I want to read your essay. If you were in high school and you went and you, instead of starting a nonprofit, you said, you know what? I was raised by a single mom who was never home, and I had to take care of my little siblings while I was going there. I want to read that in your essay. And I want to put out that I don't think a Caucasian person that has a single mom that raised their child is at any advantage over an African-American that grew up in a big city with professional parents. I think it depends who it is. Mm-hmm. Well, you disagree, because how do you know that that person isn't in a – you're telling me that, just so we're clear, mm-hmm. the Caucasian person mm-hmm. grows up poor with a single mother that takes care of their younger siblings. Mm-hmm. You're telling me is in an advantage over an African-American that grows up in a big city with two professional parents?
No, I guess what I'm saying is that a person with that background who is white and a person with that a similar background who is African American would be the African American person would be subject to implicit bias in a way that the white person is not if they showed up to a job, you know, et cetera.
Let me ask this, mm-hmm. wouldn't the white person be subject to implicit bias in the way the African American was not? Mm-hmm. Is the African American who has professional parents was taught how to eat properly, talk properly, speak properly?
You're talking about two different things.
No, I'm not.
The implicit bias happens because people have preconceived ideas of what, you know, of black people.
But implicit bias isn't restricted to race. Implicit bias, like if you, like I teach a class on implicit bias.
Yeah, yeah.
You can have implicit bias because you say, oh, you want to Boston College? My mom went to Boston College. Now there's an implicit affinity bias where you now think I'm better because we have that that similarity. So my question to you in response is, I acknowledge and agree that the African American will experience implicit bias.
Yes.
My question is, do you acknowledge and agree that it's also possible that the white poor person that has a single mother that took care of their kids that didn't have the same upbringing and the same thing will also experience implicit bias in different ways?
Yeah, yeah. I can accept that for sure.
And my question is, does one story necessarily be more weighed more than the other? And I don't know. Right. And it depends on those individual stories.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. I'm saying they both have shitty experiences.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you necessarily the black person has a worse experience than the white person in that story, or the white person has a worse experience than the black person.
Mm-hmm. But what you can say is that the history of the way this country treats black people is a little bit different than the history of the way this country treats white
Absolutely.
People.
But I could also say the experience of the white person growing up without a parent at home mm-hmm. versus the black person with two parents at home is a very different experience.
Yes.
Alex is 100%. Looking at it from a macro perspective. You're looking more in micro perspective.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm just saying that everyone's got their own story.
Totally.
And I think that that's what Roberts is saying here. Mm-hmm. And I'm not suggesting to you, because here's my question, because do you know about there's a really famous law firm. I think it's called Skadden.
I thought they were going to say Lieb.
You've heard about Skadden?
Lieb and Bloomberg.
No, not Bloomberg. It was Aiello.
Aiello.
Bloomberg doesn't want to be my partner. Yeah. That guy can't even talk.
Skadden Arps is like the firm that everybody.
Yeah. Do you know how it started?
Law schools try to apply to them.
You know how it started? Uh-huh. So they talk about it in
that book that we spoke about.
The Outliers.
Oh, really?
And they say, do you know why it was started? No, you don't know?
No,
more
no,
did you
I
know?
I don't remember. You should have asked
because
me 2 weeks
Jews
ago.
Because Jews weren't allowed at white shoe firms. Jews weren't allowed at white shoe firms. Wow. And the third guy who was the managing partner of Skadden mm-hmm. was a Jew, and he couldn't get a job at white shoe firms. Wow. And white shoe firms were elegant, not like the Jews. And they would only do mergers and acquisitions that were friendly. And the Jews didn't care if there were hostile takeovers. So the Jews got all the hostile takeovers, and all the white shoe firms referred it to the Jews because it was unbecoming to do hostile takeovers. And it turned out that his timing of when he was born was the most important era of hostile takeovers. And Skadden was started based on hostile takeovers because the Jews weren't allowed in Jewish world in any law firms.
Oh, I did not
that would have been
that.
A really good college essay.
My only point thing, my only point is that there's implicit bias against all different groups and all different shapes. Mm-hmm. And I definitely agree that the history of these United States have implicit bias against African Americans. Mm-hmm. I also think that they have implicit bias after 9/11 against Muslims.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also think that if you were to go to the country club behind my father's house, mm-hmm. St. George's, they didn't allow Jews in for a long time.
Mm-hmm. There are many country clubs that still don't allow Jews in.
I think that we didn't go over the topics we wanted to today, but we had a more important conversation.
More robust conversation.
And here's really the topic that we have to understand. Alex is right. She is. It's disappointing, disheartening that we are now changing the worldview of admissions, and we were close. If you went back to the Grutter decision, it said in 25 years, hopefully we're going to have the diverse population that we're not going to need affirmative action anymore. And we're past the 25-year mark since the 1991 Grutter decision. That all being said, the question is not whether we get to make the world we want it to be. The question is, what does the Equal Protection Clause say? And I have to tell you, Alex, I started off this conversation, let's further religion and speech rights while let's not further race and sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. Honestly, for me, I much more care about race and sexual orientation rights than religion rights. I'll tell you why. Most religion rights are not expressed by Jews or Muslims or by Jain or by Buddhists. They're expressed by a majority population. They're like the case that mm-hmm. was about getting a accommodation Morty this week was about an evangelical Christian.
Right.
One third of the population are Christian.
Yeah. Like the majority.
Right.
And so I think rights for the minority in law is more important because the majority will exert its will regardless of rights, whereas the minority needs the laws to be able to protect it right. because they're the minority.
Isn't that the purpose of the equal protection?
Well, maybe. But what I would say to you is if I was the emperor, we would care more about race and sexual orientation. But I'm not the emperor. And I'm not telling you that this is a democracy that gets to vote every time and we have a republic and we have a constitution. And I'm not telling you we shouldn't, as Gavin Newsom would tell you, that we can have more amendments to this constitution. Let's have more.
Good luck.
I don't think it's happening. But if you read the constitution, the First Amendment talks about freedom of speech and freedom of religion, right? Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that if you have a battle of express rights, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, Alex says, isn't that what equal protection means? Is that what you just said to me? Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have to know what freedom of speech and freedom of religion means. It says it on its face. Like, I don't need to, like, delve into this stuff. Right. So at the end of the day, what I saw the Supreme Court do is go textualist. Mm-hmm. No interpretation necessary. What we got moving forward is that we're going to be colorblind. What we got going forward is, yeah, you can have your own story. What we got going forward on the cake case, which we didn't go into, which I think is so, so, so important, is that you are not, and Lauren and I had this conversation, Lauren, you are not allowed to deny a person because of their sexual orientation getting services at your business. That is illegal, not allowed. That is not allowed. But you don't have to provide services on a topic like the Leapcast can't get sued tomorrow because we're not talking enough about interracial marriage. Mm-hmm. We can talk about whatever topic we want. Mm-hmm. It's a freedom of speech mm-hmm. conversation.
But you can't deny someone coming on your show because they're black.
That's all the case says. And then when it comes to religious case, which was a 9-0 decision, I have to tell you, it says, I might not like your religion because I'm not evangelical Christian. But if I was, it's actually good for the minority religions, isn't it, Morty?
It is.
It says it's about Sunday Sabbath.
There can be a lot of Orthodox Jews now working in law enforcement.
It's very important.
Wow. Yeah.
Because
that's a cool perspective.
I don't know any Orthodox Jews that work in law
enforcement. And why
not? Yeah, I've never met one.
Yeah.
Because they won't get an accommodation to not work on Saturday.
Yeah. Wow. It's like a big problem.
Yeah.
And what this says is it used to be that they had to show just a de minimis hardship, meaning like nothingness, to say.
Right. Basically, they could say, you know, it's not fair to, it's bad for employee morale to let you not work Saturday.
And they, meaning the business. The business Correct. Could say, Morty says, I want to work on Saturday. I don't want to work on Saturday. I can't do it. It's my religion. I can't do it. And the business could say, it's going to hurt employee morale. You have to do it or leave.
Right.
Now it says, based on the context of that business, facts and circumstances, it must be a substantial burden on the business or Morty gets to do that.
Yeah, that's big.
And that's huge.
That does make sense from a textual point of view because the phrase is undue hardship. That's not de minimis.
And also, if you go back to the prior decision on that, like if you were going to go back in time, when we look at this decision 50 years ago in Transworld Airlines v. Hardison, it actually says substantial multiple times.
Yeah.
And that's why it's a 9-0 decision. They said you cherry picked the wrong word from the decision. But anyway. We can go back and forth philosophically about student loans. Should have they done them? Should have they not? As Morty said multiple times, and I agree with him completely, giving someone a break on student loans doesn't solve college debt. We have to actually have a fundamental issue to solve college debt. You can't put a Band-Aid on a gushing blood. Let's fix that. Maybe then put the Band-Aid on after you fix it. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it backwards. But it's not going to change everyone's lives, people. Even if you got $20,000 difference, it might feel like it changed your life, but it's not. College admissions is going to affect some people, but if you went back to that author I just talked about a second ago that wrote The Outliers, he posits that finishing the top of a lower school actually has better long-term results than finishing in the bottom of a higher school. So maybe, just maybe, this decision denying certain races to get into better schools is actually going to benefit them long-term by going to a worser school and finishing in the top of the class. And maybe that's what the social science supports. And maybe you're actually hurting racial minorities by ignoring their implicit bias against them by actually helping them. I don't know. That's a philosophical conversation. But what I can tell you is the two most important decisions, setting aside the fact that we do believe that legislatures can't do whatever they want and they have to be in check by the court, which is the most important decision of this term, that state courts have power and legislatures, like Trump would want, can't go rogue. Mm-hmm. The two most important decisions are easily that employers – you say this is a conservative court, Lauren. Conservative court, rogue conservative court. Biden called, he didn't say rogue. They asked him if it was rogue. He goes, it's not normal. But guess what? We had a 9-0 decision giving employees rights, not employers' rights, which is the most liberal thing I've ever heard of in my life.
So we like that.
I don't know if we like it or we don't. It's just a matter of fact. Like telling employees that employers have to expend resources to accommodate their religious needs is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then telling people that they have First Amendment freedom of speech rights and they don't have to be slaves to do things that are against their morals is huge. So I guess the real takeaway, Morty, you tell me at the law firm of Mordechai, Chazaka, what you guys are thinking. But
it seems like it's excluding non-Jews.
It is. Yeah. Well, you know what it is. It's about what they serve on Thanksgiving if they have the wrong cauliflower.
So we started with the most important point. We might as well end with the most important
point.
But
I want to know what you think because I heard you just say it. I think that these decisions are really consistent on the law and the court is not being a radical court. And I think Roberts has reestablished the middle ground. And while policy-wise, I don't agree with all the decisions if I was writing the Constitution.
They're not supposed to rule based on policy. They're supposed to rule based on their interpretation of the law.
You close out the Liebcast and tell us what you think.
Yeah, no, I think these judges are honorable people. Like, I don't think these are rogue judges. They have, you know, misaligned interests. I think they just have different interpretations of the law. And yes, does it lead to policy interpretations that people may not like? Yeah. But, you know, I think these judges are doing their job, and we might not always agree, but I think they are being consistent, to your point.
And do you agree that their interpretations are founded in the law? That's really where
I do think so, yeah.
So the Leapcast needs you to know that you can go turn on whichever talk media that you want that this weekend after they've read the decisions and then they decide how they want everyone to be spinning it to you because the media is controlling us.
Yeah, right. And if you have policy differences, then go lobby your congressman to change the laws.
I leave for the July 4th weekend knowing that the
first, Lauren's birthday,
the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, the freedoms we hold dear on the nation's birthday, those are intact. This is the Leapcast.
Find us on social media at Listen to Leap or visit listentoleap.com.